At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Svetlana Lakova, historian Svetlana Lakova, and author Svetlana Lakova. Right now, we're investigating the Mueller report because over these months, Svetlana Lakova has helped me understand how it is that she was entangled through no effort of her own into the large story of Russiagate. It is now March, April, May, and June of 2019, the Mueller Report. The Mueller Report, its formal title is Report on the Investigation into Russian Interference in the 2016 Presidential Election, is delivered to the Department of Justice in March of 2019. The 448-page report released by the Department of Justice April 18, 2019. Mr. Mueller comes before Congress in June of 2019 to answer questions about his report. Svetlana, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. The Mueller report, investigating all aspects of Russian interference. Were you named in the Mueller report? Were you questioned by the Mueller team at any point prior to the release of the report in March of 2019? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John, and thank you for having me. I was never questioned before, during, or after the Mueller report by Special Counsel Mueller or any of his team. Never, ever contacted.
All right. You were not contacted. During the course of the Q&A with Mr. Mueller before Congress, I believe your name was mentioned. How so?
I believe Congressman Devin Nunes brought up the fact that he asked, because, of course, the story about me and the false story about me and General Michael Flynn was circulated in the national and international media to the effect that, I had the fake story was that I had an affair with General Flynn and I seduced him on behalf of Russian intelligence. And given that General Flynn was a most important Trump advisor to be investigated by, first of all, the FBI and then the Mueller team, it would have been, of course, natural that special counsel would look at that. So Congressman Nunes asked a special counsel Mueller, given the importance, how serious the allegations were, whether he ever interviewed me. And special counsel Mueller would not answer the question.
Yeah, you have the transcript. Read the part where Congressman Nunes, who was chair of the House Intelligence Committee when the investigation of the Russiagate became national news, the question and answer. Do you have the transcript so you can read it to us?
Yes, that's right. Nunes, the first Trump associate to be investigated was General Flynn. Many of the allegations against him stem from the false media reports that he had an affair with the Cambridge academic Svetlana Lakova and that Lakova was a Russian spy. Some of these allegations were made public in a 2017 article written by British intelligence historian Christopher Andrew. Your report fails to reveal how and why Andrew and basically others spread these allegations. And you failed to interview Svetlana Lakova about this matters. Is that correct? End of question from Nunes. Mueller says, I'm not going to get into those matters to which you refer. Nunes says, you had a team of 19 lawyers, 40 agents, and an unlimited budget, correct, Mr. Mueller? And Mueller says, I would not say we had an unlimited budget. End of the exchange.
Svetlana, the Mueller investigation team not asking you questions about the events in Cambridge in the winter of 2014 and afterwards is puzzling. However, you've told me that you had a conversation with Christopher Andrew, your mentor at Cambridge, about the Mueller investigation in 2018. What was the nature of that conversation?
You might recall, and this is something we covered in one of the previous conversations with you, that in February 2017, so a year prior to this, before Mueller was actually appointed, Special Counsel Mueller was appointed, Christopher Andrew, who was somebody who I trusted, who used to be my mentor, somebody I've known for years, all of a sudden, without telling me, published a completely false narrative in the Sunday Times in London about the 2014 dinner with the then head of the DIA, General Flynn. And some of the things he said is that General Flynn was attracted to me. He was not. That he invited me to Moscow with him. He did not. And that that I showed him some erotic picture. That's also not true. So you will recall that the truth was that Christopher Andrew and others invited me to dinner with the head of DIA. I showed him historical material. He was interested in the historical material, and that was the only one time I ever met General Flynn. And then without me knowing, without me being consulted, suddenly he publishes this, Christopher Andrew publishes this article in Sunday Times in 2017, making those, false accusations against General Flynn. And that's just maybe a couple of weeks after General Flynn gets outed as the head of Trump, as Trump's national security advisor. So there was quite a horrible article. And I'm not mentioned there by name, but I'm mentioned there as a Russian-born, student who attended the dinner. So it's enough to identify me. And obviously it's just false, right? The story is false. So since 2017, I kept asking Professor Andrew to withdraw this article, and I couldn't understand why he wouldn't, because the things he said there were false. So fast forward to 2018, so I spent a year asking him to withdraw this. So fast forward to 2018, by that point, Stephen Halper is already outed as an FBI informer, and he's outed as the person who falsely told the FBI that I compromised General Flynn on behalf of Russian intelligence. So it becomes, again, urgent that Christopher Andrew withdraws the false article, and he doesn't. Instead of which, he says that he emails me to say, and we also have phone conversations about that, that my emails with General Flynn are in the hands of Special Counsel Mueller, and if Flynn did nothing wrong, then Mueller surely would establish that. And I found that quite an extraordinary statement.
All right, let me set this up just a moment. In March and April and May and June of 2019, the Mueller report is given to the public and Mr. Mueller testifies. Okay. In that time, in June of 2019, Congressman Nunes asked Mr. Mueller, were you investigated? Were you ever questioned? Mr. Mueller will not answer that question. We know that you were not, because you've just told us so. A year before, in the spring of 2018, you were exchanging with Christopher Andrew to withdraw his false statements that were published in 2017. He refused, and at that point, he mentioned the Mueller investigation, and he said that the Mueller investigation have emails between you and General Flynn. Is that all correct?
Correct.
Do you know why Christopher Andrew knew such a thing, where he learned such a thing about what the Mueller team did or did not know?
At that point, I didn't. I found that odd. But at that point, you will recall that everything was odd. Everything that was happening to me was odd. But looking back at it now, since then, new information has come to light, specifically from Christopher Andrews' business partner, a friend, and an FBI informer, Stephen Halper. And his lawyer said, the man called Luskin, Bob Luskin, that Bob Luskin represented Stephen Halper to Special Counsel Mueller. And that Stephen Halper was a witness to Mueller. And the only thing I can conclude based on the information that has since come to light is that somehow Stephen Halper was involved in not only providing, you know, the information to the FBI about me, General Flynn, and then General Flynn that was false, but potentially, given that he was a witness to Special Counsel Mueller, and given that General Flynn was the most sort of prized, suspect, although he was completely innocent of any Russia collusion, but he was the one who was accused of that. The only thing I can conclude that is that Christopher Andrew found that out from his friend Stephen Halper.
Svetlana Lukova, the author of The Spy Who Changed History, the historian Svetlana Lukova, we're piecing together a story that, as of now, is not complete. There are pieces missing, large pieces missing. One of those pieces you just heard from Svetlana Lukova. How did the esteemed Cambridge professor Christopher Andrew learn that the Mueller investigation had obtained emails exchanges between Michael Flynn and Svetlana Lukova? How did he know that? And why did he mention that to Svetlana in the spring of 2018? Then a year later, we learned that Svetlana was never questioned by the Mueller team. There was no instance in exchange with Congressman Nunes whether Svetlana was critical or ignored or in a matter of indifference to the Mueller team. We don't know these things. This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Michael Vlahos of Johns Hopkins. He teaches history. And Michael and I are taking our roles as Germanicus and Gaius, living in Londinium in 90 AD, reflecting upon the history of Rome. We're happy Roman citizens, equestrian class, and we're well educated about the politics in Rome these last several hundred years through the Civil War period that resulted in the Republic passing into the hands of Augustus, who is a Julian, descended from Julius Caesar, and now passing into the Flavian dynasty, which is present. Domitian is our emperor. He's semi-divine. However, I make the point, because Michael and I can go back as Germanicus and Gaius 2,000 years, that it was in this period of the first century A.D., following Augustus, that the Civil War also established another institution, not just rising up in a contest for control of an empire, but also the institution of succession by violence. I list the questions about Tiberius's end at the hands of Caligula, the question of Caligula's ends at the hands of the Senate and the Praetorian Guard, the exit of Claudius at the hands of his wife, or perhaps also his wife, and the Senate, the exit of Nero, by his own hand, we're told, but perhaps not, because he declined to kill himself, certainly with the permission and ushering of the Senate. And now we pass into the Flavian dynasty through the year of four emperors, 69 AD, where they were killing each other. By the time we come to Domitian, and we can see forward, Domitian will be exited by the Praetorian Guard and perhaps his manservants, but we're not certain. What we're fixing here is that there is a tradition of violence in the empire, and it follows a tradition of violence in the Republic. That was the Civil War. Germanicus, a very good evening to you. Ranging over 2,000 years, I was surprised, shocked, disappointed, but then again not, to see that there are incomplete reports that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, a very well-educated man, very sober-minded, is now reflecting to book writers, again, this is not confirmed, it's just in the news, that he had informal or casual or around-the-edge discussions during the Trump administration to prepare for or to worry about a possible putsch by Donald Trump to override the election process of November of 2020. I stop there because we don't have details and it all could be misreported. But in any event, what I do take is that for us, Germanicus and Gaius in 90 AD, that is part of our tradition of civil war that we've passed on for 2,000 years. Once more, the U.S., built on Roman law, built on Roman architecture, built on a Roman understanding of the relationship between the Senate, the House, and the executive, is following that tradition. I'm not certain that the members of the parties are aware of this, Germanicus, but certainly they're introducing the possibility that if you, as the playwrights say, if you show a weapon in the first act, you better use it in the fifth. Good evening to you, Germanicus.
Good evening, Gaius. What we're witnessing in the United States today could be called a coalescence of things that are coming together, taking shape and form. And I think one lens to look through the events of the last several months, especially after the election leading up to, you know, the little whiff on January 6th, all speak to some shifts that are coming together, especially within the government, or rather the state itself, the collection of agencies in the executive branch that essentially run the country and include the American military. And what has been revealed, although much of it was publicly known at the time, is that the American military, under its Praetorian prefect, its Magister Militum, meaning the lead commander, General Milley, has made it clear that it will not essentially follow the commands of the president or emperor, but will essentially regard itself as the repository of all legitimate succession, and will ensure that there is a legitimate succession every 4 years, according to its own understanding of what that should be. And this is a big shift in the nature of the American constitutional order. And the only reason it is not a, what the French would call a rupture, a rupture or tearing apart, is that it is not accompanied by any events. Nothing happened in which the military intervened.
Yes, we're told that it was talk. That's all we're given is talk.
Right.
What we have.
With the talk, by virtue of it being public, by virtue of it being enunciated in the first place and in an official manner through memos, recorded statements, testimony, etc., that talk really is token. It's evidence of the coalescence in which it is now clear that the American military is not only a political actor, which it's been for some time, especially since World War II and the emergence of the Cold War, which pulled the military into deep political choices and discussions, mostly because of the nature of America's global involvement. But now the military is domestically involved politically. It is not simply a player. It is arrogating to itself by a dint of Milley's own public declarations that the military is the backstop of the constitutional order and is not, you know, in the command chain of the executive branch. It is its own force for constitutional legitimacy.
And Germanicus, I want to press this point that you've revealed here right now. The military today in the 21st century, going back to the first century, 2,000 years ago, the military saw its role in those successive violent decisions made against emperors as protecting the people of the Senate and people of Rome. It saw it as a defender of the Republic and then followed by a defender of the empire, not as a challenger.
Absolutely, Gaius. This is the subtle shift that occurred in Rome. The obvious shift was going from a republic based solely on the Senate and its own members to something more complex led by an emperor. But the subtle shift was that the constitutional sense of virtue in terms of the defense of the state had shifted dramatically. So that the military became increasingly the instrument of legitimacy and the shield of the res publica, which was still a term that Romans used. And this is what's happened today. And Milley, General Milley, has made this quite clear. And what this means is that we have to look a little more deeply at what's been going on. And the U.S., when it was a republic, had a nation-in-arms model in which all the citizens were there to defend the country in time of need. And for that, a necessary contingent defense, we created what I would call a colonel officer corps, meaning we had a very tiny army, and its officer corps was there, along with all the reserve officers, to be able to mobilize all of the citizenry, which is to say in those days all of the male citizenry in the Republic, to form an effective military. This is what we did in World War II. What we have transitioned to over the course of the Cold War, especially since going to the so-called all-volunteer force in the very end of the Vietnam period, is that the Army, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, and even the paramilitary outfits like the CIA have been transformed from a mobilization colonel officer corps enshrining the model of the Republican nation, which is the nation in arms, into a military order. A military order were religious orders of knights like the Templars and the Hospitallers, and that Templar model, which served the Pope, was the model for the defense of Christendom until the siege of Malta against the Turks.
Germanicus, we will continue this. I promise, because what we're having here is discovering an institution within an institution. Within the Civil War created by the Romans 2,000 years ago, is the military, the pointed end of the stick, coming to the defense of the status quo. Michael Vlahos, who was also Germanicus, John Batchelor, who was also Caius in 90 AD Londinium. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.